This is a Kim Monson news briefing. Natelson on the Declaration at 2:50, a conservative revolution that kept the rights of Englishmen. The Declaration of Independence turns 250 this year, and constitutional scholar Rob Natelson used the milestone to revisit how the document came to be, why some founders feared its timing, and why it still shapes American argument today. Natelson, a former University of Montana constitutional law professor who serves as senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Mountain States Policy Center and heads the Constitutional Studies Center at Colorado's Independence Institute, joined The Kim Monson Show to walk through a six-part series he wrote for the Mountain States Policy Center and published as op-eds in The Epic Times, with free versions on the Mountain States Policy Center website. He is the author of the original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. The series treats the founding generation as people making hard choices under pressure rather than figures on a postage stamp. Each installment takes a slice of the story, the events that led to the break with Britain, the founder who argued the timing was wrong, the committee that drafted the text, the document's structure, its debt to history, and its legacy. Natelson opened the first installment with a fact he says schools tend to skip. North American colonists were, on the whole, contented British subjects until about 1763. They prized the rights of Englishmen and enjoyed a wide measure of self-government. Before that year, he explained, the British Empire ran less like a unified state and more like a federation. London handled foreign affairs, regulated trade among the empire's units, and ran the imperial post office, while the 13 colonies imposed their own taxes and made their own local law through their assemblies. That balance collapsed after the French and Indian War, when the British ministry began restricting westward migration, levying new taxes such as the stamp tax and the Townshend duties, regulating manufacturing, and meddling with colonial currency. The colonists protested, petitioned, and held conventions. Armed resistance broke out in 1775 and ran for roughly 14 months before independence was declared. Natelson drew the parallel to the present directly. A federation where the central authority is growing relentlessly and always grabbing for more power, Natelson said, prefacing the line with a note that the dynamic should sound familiar. Not every leader wanted to declare independence in the summer of 1776, and Natelson devoted his second installment to the most prominent dissenter. And then there were those people like the great John Dickinson, one of the foremost founders who recognized that independence might be necessary down the road, but thought that issuing the Declaration in July of 1776 was premature and might cause more problems than it solved, Natelson told Kim Monson. On July 1, 1776, Dickinson argued against the timing in a celebrated Continental Congress debate with John Adams, and Adams prevailed. Natelson was careful to defend Dickinson's character as a patriot who doubted only the timing. Dickinson stayed committed to the American cause, and after he lost that vote, he actually enlisted in the army to help fight the British, Natelson said. Dickinson worried that the colony should first secure a French alliance and the means to sustain a long war. When the vote went against him, he stayed away so the decision could be unanimous, then resigned from Congress to join the Continental Army. He had also chaired the committee that drafted the Articles of Confederation. Dickinson's caution, in Natelson's telling, was the prudence of a patriot, and parts of it proved prophetic as the war dragged on at great cost. Dickinson served as the show's quote of the day, honored as the penman of the Revolution, for his Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania. Thomas Jefferson is remembered as the author of the Declaration, and Natelson agreed that he wrote most of it. Most people think of Thomas Jefferson as writing the Declaration of Independence, and that's true, he produced the first draft. He wrote most of it, but he was one of a committee, which historians call the Committee of Five, Natelson said. The Continental Congress appointed that committee on June 11, 1776. Alongside Jefferson sat John Adams, Roger Sherman, Benjamin Franklin, and Robert R. Livingston. Natelson noted that Livingston is the least known of the group yet among the most consequential, since he helped launch the first steamboats on the Hudson River early in the next century. Sherman drew special attention for a record few can match. He signed the Declaration of the Causes for taking up arms. He signed the Constitution. He signed the Articles of Confederation. Roger Sherman was involved in virtually every significant, important step in the founding era, Nate Tolson said. The men who wrote it installment also returned to Adams, whom Kim quoted from the essay. As president, he made decisions that rendered him deeply unpopular, secured his defeat for re-election, and eventually proved entirely correct. The chief example was foreign policy. During the Quasi War with France from 1798 to 1800, with Federalists led by Alexander Hamilton agitating for a full war, President Adams sent diplomats to Paris and reached a negotiated settlement that kept the peace. Nadelson called it probably Adams's greatest achievement as president, a peace that bought the young country time to grow even as it angered his own party and helped cost him the election of 1800. For all its violence, Nadelson argued, the American Revolution preserved far more than it discarded. The American Revolution was violent. But it's also been described as a conservative revolution because we decided to keep the institutions that we had had under the English. So we kept, for example, Anglo-American law. We still use Anglo-American law today. Colorado and most states have statutes that explicitly import into our law the common law of England, Nadelson said. That continuity runs deep into the Constitution itself. The Eighth Amendment draws its bar on cruel and unusual punishments, almost word for word from the English Bill of Rights of 1689. The fourth and fifth installments walk through how the Declaration of Independence is organized and where its ideas came from, tracing its line of descent from older English and European sources. The continuity Nadelson described is why, in his account, the founders could break from the crown while keeping the legal inheritance that made self-government workable. The declaration was meant in part to win foreign allies, but that payoff was slow. It took the Battle of Saratoga for the French to help us, Nadelson said of the legacy installment. The American victory at Saratoga in 1770 finally persuaded France to commit, and the Treaty of Alliance followed in 1778, more than a year after independence was declared. The document's deeper legacy, Nadelson said, lay in the ideas it planted. And I give as an example of that Abraham Lincoln's references to the Declaration of Independence, to the idea that all men are created equal, as an indictment of slavery, he said. Nadelson closed with a ranking that placed the Declaration in rare company. And I point out that ultimately, the Declaration of Independence proved to be one of the four most important secular political documents in Western history, he said. The four, in his account, Magna Carta, the Code of the Emperor Justinian, which became the basis for law throughout all of Europe, are the United States Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Nadelson brings unusual standing to that comparison. He co-edited the first complete online edition of the Emperor Justinian's Roman Law Collection, one of the very texts he names. He ranks the Declaration among them as a scholar's judgment about which documents most shaped the Western political tradition. And now, Kim's perspective. I read all six of these pieces the night before Rob came on, and what stayed with me is how close that founding story still feels. A central authority that keeps grabbing for more power was the grievance in 1776, and it is the fight we are in now, the same struggle between freedom and force that drives every conversation on this show. Rob's point that Colorado and most states wrote the common law of England directly into our own statutes is a reminder that the founders kept the protections that secured liberty and built on what already worked. John Dickinson asking hard questions about timing, John Adams accepting unpopularity to keep the peace, Lincoln reaching back to all men are created equal to confront slavery. These are people who took ideas seriously and paid a price for them. At 250 years, the Declaration is worth reading again, slowly, because the questions it raised about who governs whom have never gone away. That is exactly why history like this belongs in our daily conversation. For the full article with sources and links, visit kimmonson.com. This has been a Kim Monson News Briefing.